Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Today is May 25th, 2016. The markets were up today. The Dow closing at 17,851, the NASDAQ at 4894, and the S&P at 2090. Misreading my handwriting. Tonight, we're discussing the economic outlook with Moravian Professor James West. I'm very excited about this because I've not done anything like this before. I know it's a gorgeous evening, but we hope you stay tuned because it's going to be a fun show, and we hope that we can help explain a few things and help us get a better understanding of what we really have to pay attention to when you hear people talk about the economy, etc. We are live tonight. If you have questions, you're welcome to call. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Lori is in the studio with us this evening and she'll answer the calls. If you want to talk live on air, we'll just put you right through. If you don't want to talk live on air, you can give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. We do ask that you mute your radio so that you can hear me without delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The number again, 610-758-8810. My guest this evening, as I mentioned, is Professor James West of Moravian College. He earned his bachelor's degree from Marquette University in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Yay, Midwestern. He then completed a master's degree at the University of Pune in Maharashtra, India, and then an MBA and PhD in business and economics at Lehigh University in Bethlehem. His doctoral research focused on savings and investment behavior and economic growth in developing countries. He began his professional career as a development economist, and rural development project member in India. Dr. West has traveled and researched extensively, particularly in the developing world, including China, South Korea, Iran, Israel, Brazil, Poland, Hungary, Slovakia, and the Czech Republic. He's also traveled and conducted economic research in Western Europe and Australia. He was a Fulbright Scholar in Slovakia and won the Lindbach Award for Distinguished Teaching at Moravian College, as well as the President's Award for Faculty Excellence. Dr. West has written many scholarly articles, as well as practitioner articles and op-ed pieces. He serves as advisor for the International Management majors at Moravian, has chaired the Economic and Business Department for many years, but is happily now just a professor. Just a professor. Welcome to the show, Professor West.
Thank you, Lori. It's a pleasure to be here tonight. As you said, it's a beautiful, sunny evening. So there's no better time to discuss economics. So I hope people will enjoy a nice economic discussion. So thank you again.
Well, thank you for being here. I had not done a show having an economist on before, and someone had suggested
it's lively.
It is. It's going to be lively. It's going to be fun. So someone had suggested having you on, and I contacted you, and I really appreciate that you came on, and we'll see what we can get through tonight. So one of the things that I would like to do, if we could, is our listeners, myself, let's do it like we're your students, and you're trying to kind of, we only have an hour to kind of give us the biggest takeaways you think you might share with us of what we have to pay attention to when we're talking about economics. And there's so many factors. Obviously, you teach classes on this, you know, for years and years. So there's so much. But I know that there are a number of different pieces of economics that affect different people in different ways, individuals, businesses, industry, government. So can you give us a primer on the basics of economics and then how that might apply from a world, domestic, and individual perspective? But let's first start with some of the primer of the basics of economics. I'm talking, you know, your basics. What are economics?
Okay, the basics could be quite extensive, but
I know.
I was thinking about this, and I said, if a lot of business people may be listening, and most of them may have had a marketing course or something at some point, and they talk about the four P's of marketing, product and promotion and pricing and so on. Well, a couple of years ago, I wrote an op-ed, which I oftentimes give to my students, called The Four P's of Economics. And I think that's a good way to kind of frame what a free enterprise system focuses on. And the four P's are production, prices, property, and profits. And I think we have a lot of misinformation about some of these things and their importance. First of all, production. The economy is about producing goods and services for people. The founder of modern economic thinking was a fellow by the name of Adam Smith. Back in 1776, wrote a book called The Wealth of Nations. And The Wealth of Nations was a major change in thinking for people because Smith said, wealth is not making the king rich. Wealth is actually taking the resources of the country and producing goods and services, housing and healthcare and clothing and so on, to help improve the lives of the people, the consumers, and make those people consumers of a higher standard of living, better education, better everything. So production is very important. Production is also very important for the individual because an individual finds their purpose a lot of times in the work and the service that they do, and it's also a source of income. So a lot of the focus of economics is about how do we encourage production, how do we make production effective, and also how are we, you know, keep it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing are prices. Okay, prices, more than anything, are a form of communication. Prices are signals in the economy to what people want and how much it costs to get the resources to deliver those things. So prices are more than just a number that, you know, retailers stick on a product, but they are a vital piece of communications that tie things together. We couldn't tell a story without words and letters. And likewise, we can't tell and unravel the complexities of the economy without understanding a legitimate price system. Overriding the price system is attractive to people, but we have to recognize when we override the price system and we install our own prices and floors and ceilings and whatever, it's going to have side effects because prices, again, like are kind of a law of gravity, okay, in the economic mm-hmm. system. Property is another key thing. Property is our rights as individuals to hold our property and to respect the property rights of others as well as have people respect our property rights. So good property law and protection of the property right enables countries to develop. There's been a lot of research about countries and the development of property rights. An economist I like to quote has an interesting name, the same name as a philosopher, Hernando de Soto, but is a Peruvian economist who wrote about the idea that property rights are the essential element to define a development of a country. Primer is getting a little bit long here.
No, I'm loving it.
But the fourth P is probably the most controversial one, profits. People look at profits and they say, oh, okay, they're making these profits, they're exploiting the workers, they're ruining the environment, they're doing all these things. But economists say, no, profits are, here's one, profits are a reward for creativity. We want an economy that is creative. We want people to produce new goods and services in an ethical manner, mm-hmm. not to generate quote unquote profits, okay, through any type of exploitation, but by encouraging ethical production of goods and services that people want, and that this profit enables the entrepreneur to finance these activities and so on. An economy without profit would be very short of ideas in a very small amount of time.
And then it becomes that circular, it feeds
right.
itself, then those profits go
right.
back into production.
Yeah, so these four things. So as a takeaway for a primer, I would say again, production, property, prices, and profits. And I tell the students that really this is something they should understand, that we have kind of a marvelous economic system. And it has its obviously it has its flaws and it has needs its corrections and so on. But it is a system that has generated a lot of wealth and a lot of prosperity for a lot of people. And so I'm more than an economic forecaster, I'm an economic professor. I like talking about economics and its relationship to The students' lives, as well as the well-being of the economy in the U.S., as well as the economy of the world.
Well, it's interesting because you said in a couple different references to both of those about, you know, laws around property and profits in a proper legal way kind of thing. I've had discussions with folks about, you know, people complain about regulation and government regulation. I said, well, if everybody did everything the proper way and the right way, we wouldn't need any regulation. And then that actually ends up being kind of an overlay to products, pricing, property and profits. We sometimes have to have regulations to help kind of monitor all of this, which is part of that economic conversation that we have sometimes where government gets involved. I love this so far. I'm so excited. This is fun for me, something a little different. Folks, we are talking with Professor James West from Moravian College, and we are talking about some of the basics of economics, and then we're going to talk about how that impacts us as individuals and business industry and the global economy as well, hopefully, if we don't run out of time. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a second.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. We have in the studio with us this evening Professor James West from Moravian College, and we are talking about economics, the economic outlook, and he just gave us a primer on economics using the four P's: products, pricing, property, and profits.
Close.
No, did I? What did I say?
Production.
Excuse me, not products. Production. Production of something.
Profits, pricing, perfect. Prices, and profits.
Production, prices, property, and profits. Okay. We'll have it down, and he's going to test me at the end of this.
I brought the quiz in my back pocket. But I wanted to go back to the point where you mentioned about the government's regulation. And, you know, modern economics started in 1776, I mentioned, with Adam Smith's work. That's coincident with the Declaration of Independence. So we had kind of this movement of democratic government and free enterprise economics kind of simultaneously arising on the horizon of humanity. And both of them go together. So an economist, although the four P's relate primarily to business, private business, economists look to the role of government. Government plays a very important role. It's like in a sporting match, right? They have to establish the rules and regulations. You have to have referees. You have to have stoplights on the street corners. You have to have, you know, police protecting the laws and so on. So nobody is against government. That's sometimes a false dichotomy that, if you're for free markets, then you're against government. And that's not the case at all. There can be situations where the government overreaches, and that is problematic. And it not only hurts the government, I think it hurts business as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's now jump from understanding the primer of economics, because I think that's a great framework. And now let's apply that maybe to the world perspective. So how do you see these factors applying in the global markets? And in fact, has it evolved in recent years?
Well, right now, President Obama and the leaders of the world are at the G7 meeting, okay, in Japan, discussing a lot of the issues, the G7 being a group of seven countries that are leading economic powers in the world. And they're meeting to look at some of these problems. And we see there's a lot of instability in the world. There's been a lot of transition over the past few years. So we're trying to look forward to see where is the growth areas and where can we hope for better stability and so on. Now, my experience, I had two long-term living experiences, one in India and then one in Slovakia, which were two very different countries. Mm-hmm. Slovakia, for example, was a communist country. And so they had the challenge of kind of breaking out of the communist mentality and kind of implementing markets. None of these four things, property, prices, profits, none of that existed. And suddenly they were faced with the not only the problem of dealing with this, but the opportunity of dealing with this. And I was very pleased to see Slovakia, I think, has done a pretty good job, okay, in making a lot of these changes. India, likewise, okay, is, you know, was India was kind of a very socialist country. It just it inherited from the British, but also from the just the regulatory system that was there, a very bureaucratic socialist approach towards economics. But in the last couple of decades has really seized the opportunity to encourage investment, and education, okay? And you see a lot of education driving the transformation of India. The economists or whoever came up with the acronym, that we like acronyms. So mm-hmm. The last one was the four Ps. This one, or that's not really an acronym, but the four Ps. This one's BRIC, or BRICS, mm-hmm. the Brazil, Russia, India, China. They were seen as four of the emerging markets, four countries that would just do tremendously in the future as communism and socialism kind of faded and free enterprise kind of rose to the forefront. It hasn't been as smooth as we like. We see there have been substantial problems in Russia, particularly in Brazil. China, tremendous amount of growth, but not quite the democratic reform and so on that people have been looking for. And now we see China kind of slowing down, and that's been a bit of drag on the economy. And it's actually creating a lot of rhetoric that maybe the Chinese are too aggressive in the markets. And I know that in the G7 meeting, China is going to be the target of many of the discussions mm-hmm. People are having. So we see that. But India, I would say, has really been a tremendous success story out of the BRICS. And I think they're making a lot of strides in that. Again, India is a complex economy with a lot of issues. But their Prime Minister Modi, who will be coming to the U.S. in a few weeks, I think, is a pretty pretty forward-looking person, and I think is really a little slower. People are making the reforms are a little slower than people thought they would be at first, but they really seem to be taking effect.
So where we see the production, pricing, property, and profits in, like, the U.S., when we look at the U.S. economy, we've had this for a long time. So in those other developing countries where they really didn't have that opportunity for profiting from creativity necessarily. We're starting to see it in some regard, but there's still other controls. Like in China, it's slowing down because they're not building as much infrastructure or some.
Well, they're quite an admirable job of building infrastructure.
But they're slowing it down now or something, and that's
where just the growth rates. I mean, China was growing in double digits for years, mm-hmm. for decades, and you can almost say. But it's actually slowed down to a rate that is concerning people. And China is trying to offset this. Some people would look and say, look, by through currency movements. And the depreciation of the currency is really irritating some of their neighbors. Mm-hmm. So it's creating a little bit of tension within the international markets right now. But nevertheless, China is certainly an important player in the global economy. So it is a, you know, it's a also a big holder of U.S. debt. And so we have a strong partnership with China. But there are issues, and many countries have issues with China's rapid growth and their decisions that they've been making. I think, again, with countries like India, Brazil, and so on, that the transition to develop the sets of institutions that allow these institutions, profits, prices, and so on, to develop has been is harder than you think. You know, it's harder than people think. The fact that they're a quick fix. One of the economists used to say, we need like shock therapy, just go in there and change everything quickly. But it's a lot harder than that. So there's been a little bit of reversing, you know, that the socialist popularity has been kind of coming back. And so the market ideology is a little bit under attack. Even in the United States, we see some of the political rhetoric. We see, you know, socialism is good, you know, stuff like that. And certainly thinking about the values of society and viewing economics in the broader context of a social enterprise, you know, that we need to take these things into account. But I think it's dangerous, I think, to glamorize socialist outcomes because they're quite devastating. We see kind of an example in the case of Venezuela right now, which was just lauding its socialist successes and now is in great, you know, great hardship for the people. And it's just, so I think my job as a professor, I think, sometimes is to enthusiastically talk about the free enterprise system and talk about the great system that we have here, but also recognize the system is in a context of a social, moral, ethical, you know, political environment. Mm-hmm. And so we need to factor these other things in. And to be too ideological on one side or the other is oftentimes a dangerous formula.
Right. And actually, you kind of get that even in your four P's when you talk about the profits are rewarding creativity, which you want. And but yet your Adam Smith.
Glad you learned that one. That's an important one.
Recognize that the production was so important. So because the production not only, was good for the country, it was good for the person who was going to work and producing, you know. So there's a nice, we have to understand, you know, socialists might say, let's just take care of all the people. But we have this profit motive, too. So there's a balance that has to exist. And I think that's really important. Well, folks, we're at our second break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air or just give your question to Lori and she can bring it into the studio. We are talking with attorney. That'll be his next job.
Not yet, yeah.
Professor James West from Moravian College. We'll be back in just a second.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Okay, and welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY. If you are outside our listening area, you can always stream online at wdiy.org. We have financial topics each and every week from 6 to 7, and tonight we are having a topic that I have not had before, which is basically economics. A little primer on economics, and now looking at the economic outlook. We're talking with Professor James West from Moravian College, so happy to have him here.
Thank you.
We talked about the primer. Production, prices, property, and profits.
No one will ever forget now.
And we talked about how important Adam Smith is, who first came up with this concept, which is great, and how it might apply, we've seen, obviously, in this country, but it's applying more and more across developing countries. So how has that global economy, where we see countries like China and India expanding and becoming more global and capitalistic, even maybe you might say. How has that global economy impacted us domestically, and do we need to watch out for certain trends?
Well, I think that we've seen that the United States for many years had the luxury, you might call it, of having two big oceans on both sides of us, and really had the opportunity to be isolated a little bit and protectionist of its policies. But in the post-World War period, through improvements in science and technology, transportation, communications, we truly are in a global economy. And now that people have around the world accepted this market system, we recognize our competitors and our partners in many different parts of the world, and we see this dynamic kind of business model kind of playing out. In some ways, we might look at the economic system, the driving competitive pressures of globalization, a little like the whack-a-mole game, that where you have to hammer down those moles as fast as possible. And the things that are popping up are trade issues, immigration issues, foreign direct investment issues, and most powerfully of all, probably technology issues. And all of these four things come in and they foment change. They force us to change.
Mm-hmm.
And people resist change.
Right.
So we have trade, we have products coming from abroad, we want to hammer down that mole. Or we have immigration, sometimes we want to hammer down that mole. Or we have foreign direct investment and outsourcing abroad, offshoring of product, we want to hammer down that. So there's a natural reaction. And I think we see a little bit of that in the economy, that the things have changed so quickly over the last couple of decades, and the global economy has encroached on our daily lives to such a large extent, people almost want to break. Mm-hmm. And you see this little bit of protectionist, anti-trade, anti-immigration, if you will. You see a lot of different things kind of popping up. And while there's always wisdom in, you know, evaluating even your harshest critics, what they have to say, there's a real benefit in recognizing that openness of the economy and openness to change is, in the long run, the absolutely most beneficial thing we can do as a country. So we don't want to shut ourselves off now. We're in the world, and we can not only prosper in the world, but we can help to lead the world in a better
direction. Well, you know, I remember, I think I was listening to an NPR program one time where they were talking about a study they had done around a consensus, where they had taken a consensus of a whole group of people, and they actually came up with the best answer by abiding by this consensus. And if we think about it, in a world market, if we really want to see improvement, whether it's environmental issues, healthcare, if we embrace this global economy, there's a better chance that we might find some consensus on improving or curing or, you know, all of our ills. You know, if you think about it, and especially if in allowing these global markets, we get more creativity and rewards for creativity. You're right. Let's not bash down the mole, because that mole might be the person who cures cancer.
Absolutely.
Or resolves, you know, our dependency on gas by, you know, coming up with that car that can drive without energy or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. I've had the good fortune and also the desire to visit as many parts of the world as I could. I try to get out there and see as much as I can. And the one thing that is the reality is really all people around the world are good. There's a lot of good people. Not everybody's a good person, but there's all nations. There's good people that of goodwill, who are looking for their countries to prosper, for their families to prosper, who are creative, intelligent, want to cooperate with each other. Within the Lehigh Valley here, we have so many diverse populations, and we see that people have become good friends and mm-hmm. good colleagues together. So this is a very important step forward. This is part of the globalization that goes beyond just economics, but it's the cultural assimilation that is necessary to take place. Mm-hmm. And economics can play a role in that, because we have a company and you have employees from all over the world. You get on an airplane and you travel to other countries where you have, you know, co-workers. So this is an important part of this intermixing of people. And I think you're exactly right that if we learn how to dialogue and consult with each other, we can find a lot more solutions, okay, than if we're, you know, antagonistic about and protectionist.
Right.
And kind of, as they say, nativist, be falling too much into our own shell.
Right. And so sometimes I think people have to realize if it impacts them, then they care and will participate. So sometimes we have to find the answer for them. So there are a number of reasons for paying attention to what goes on in the world. But people really seem to be interested when it impacts their investments as well. We can't give investment advice on the show, but from an investment perspective, are there particular indicators or news that we should understand? And we have probably a couple minutes before our break.
Well, of course, personal finance is a big part of economics as well, and making good, wise economic plans for your lifestyle is something we encourage our students to think about these things, because not only is the global picture important, but your personal picture is important, and you don't want to face unnecessary hardships because of personal mistakes. In investing, typically we say there's two basic trends. There's the industry, or there's the whole market forces, and then there's company-specific forces. Personally, I always like to look at the company specifics. You know, what is the, is it a good company? Is it a good investment? Is it well managed? Are they creative in products? And if I'm going to invest, I'd look at a company that has those qualities. The market has ups and downs, and sometimes you can pick those ups and downs. Right now, there's a lot of guesswork. People are looking at all kinds of indices. One that they're really looking at right now is this what's called the yield curve, which is the relationship between long and short-term interest rates. And there's always a prediction if that ever turns downward, that longer-term rates fall lower than short-term rates, that that's a sure predictor of a recession. And some people see some evidences of that. And the market, the stock market, has been going up for 8 years, slowly the last few months, but it's been going up. So people are a little nervous about recession and so on. So I tend to worry less about the market risks, but if I'm going to make an investment, look for a good company. Look for a company that's well managed, that you believe in, you like their products. And as a good guru on all of this is Warren Buffett, who says, pick a company you understand.
Right.
You understand what they're doing.
Right.
You know, so I think that's an important criteria.
That's interesting. Folks, we're coming up on another break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Noelle, we got your call. We'll look at your question and answer it when we come back from the break. And we are speaking with Professor James West from Moravian College this evening. We're talking about economics, the economic outlook, how it might apply to you. Again, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and we'll be back in just a second.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station, your source for NPR news, public affairs, and a great mix of hand-picked music. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 88 degrees under fair skies. Tonight, clear, lows around 58. Thursday, sunny, then a chance of thunderstorms, highs around 87. Friday, chance of thunderstorms, highs around 88. And Saturday, we have a sunny start, then thunderstorms in the afternoon with highs around 87 degrees. Folks, the time now is 6:30 p.m. Please stay tuned for Lori Siebert and your financial choices.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have with me in the studio this evening, Attorney James West. Oh, sorry. Gosh, I did it again. Really, I could be like projecting something.
I'm looking for a pay raise now.
Professor James West. And he looks very, very authoritative here. We are talking about the economic outlook. Noelle called and asked the question. She wants to know how important it is that Donald Trump keeps talking about China devaluing the currency. And what does it mean to the USA? So maybe we could break that up and kind of give our listeners an idea. What does it mean when people say, oh, devaluing of the currency, and why they worry about that? And then talk about why that means something to the USA, if you don't mind.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'd say that, you know, in economics classes, I avoid getting into political discussions. So this isn't about Donald Trump or about Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton or anybody else who might be running for president. But I would say that there is a lot of concern that China has been devaluing its currency, making its currency cheaper in terms of other currencies as a way to sell products. A weak currency makes your exports cheaper. And if you sell more exports, you have more production, and then you have more employment. As China's economy is slowing down, the leaders of China are very concerned about large groups of unemployed people. They're going to be unhappy, so they want to continue to stimulate that growth in the economy. So there is some concern about the Chinese, although they've been saying they're trying to control this, have been actually depreciating or allowing their currency to depreciate over time. That not only makes their products cheaper against the U.S., but as many of their Southeast Asian competitors are also very concerned about this. It's hard for them to compete with that. There's a tendency also to overcapacity when you do this, that you're pumping money in and you're actually glutting markets with products. And that makes it very, very difficult for other countries that are trying to build their own economic station up to move ahead.
So how does someone purposefully devalue their currency, make it cheaper?
Well, they buy other assets, okay, or they're selling their assets to bring their currency values down, okay, so they're actually putting more of their currency in what we call in the United States an easy money policy, right?
Okay.
We're just creating more and more money, and then that's bringing the value of the currencies down.
Okay.
And in the United States, we've actually experienced that. We got criticized for that back in 2010, where we had a very expansionary fiscal policy, and that excess money in the economy lowered the value of the dollar. And many of our competitor countries were saying, hey, you're cheating. You know, you're getting an advantage on your products because your currency is cheaper. And so in the case of China, people are saying the same thing. There's an interesting term for that in economics. They call it a beggar thy neighbor policy. Mm-hmm. It means you're doing something good for yourself, improving your employment and so on, by making your neighbors worse off. And the essence of free trade is trade should be voluntary, and it should be a win-win situation. When you're doing something like this, it's seen as unfair trade. And so there's a lot of call to kind of stop this thing. But again, not to pick on China too heavily, though, many countries have engaged in this over history, mm-hmm. including the United States. So we have to be just careful that that exchange rates are allowed to fluctuate on their own values and not be managed by governments through expansionary monetary policies.
So when Noel asked the question, what does it mean to the USA? It means that we might be buying products from foreign countries that are practicing this, and then our own economy might hurt if we're not producing
right.
this.
International product. Trade is going to produce changes. Mm-hmm. So we know in the Lehigh Valley here, steel at one time was a very powerful industry. We thought it would never go away. The garment industry was very big. We have virtually none of that anymore. And much of that is the result of international trade. On the other hand, we have many industries in the United States that would not have been here otherwise. We have Olympus, and we have B. Braun, and we have Vinnie and Smith. Well, that's their local, but they're domestic. But you have many companies, both domestic and international, that are creating new industries and new jobs. So the Lehigh Valley has done very well, despite losing these two big productive forces, are surviving. Now, steel, obviously had its difficulties and management issues and so on. But many of the steel executives, and even today this is a big issue, feel that some of these countries, China included, are dumping steel, meaning selling steel at below market prices so that they can, capture employment. They want to keep their steel mm-hmm. mills running. They don't want unemployed steel workers.
Mm-hmm.
And so that this idea of dumping product on the market, that was a long-time complaint of Bethlehem Steel, that they felt this was happening. And I have no doubt that probably some of that was happening. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a combination of, company issues that they had to wrestle with, but also, a kind of the unfair trade practices.
Well, we have businesses doing that in our own economy, though, too. I mean, I even recall when I was in college and I managed a drugstore, and you'd see one big retail drugstore chain come in and eat up all the little mom and pop pharmacies. And, they would say, hey, we're going to come in, we're going to have cheaper product, and this is what we're going to do. So, I mean, within our own country, we have some of that.
Well, economists would say that's natural. Industries do change. And right. there is a legitimate economic cause, which economists call economies of scale. As a company gets larger, its average costs go down. So a large chain or a large company can underprice smaller, mom-and-pop stores, if you will.
Right.
And so the mom-and-pop store has to come up with something innovative to stay in the market, because low prices aren't going to be their selling point. And so that's okay. But if you see a company coming, I mean, that's okay.
Right.
Not if you own a small company, it's not okay. But I mean, that's not necessarily a violation of any kind of economic justice, I would say.
Okay.
But where you do have violations are where you're doing predatory dumping, where you're actually coming in and trying to drive somebody out of business mm-hmm. by lowering prices. And then once they're out of business, then you raise the prices again.
Back, yeah.
That's an unethical practice. And so it does exist within domestic economies as well as between countries.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Fascinating. Good question, Noel. Folks, if you do have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Anything else we need to pay attention to domestically that we want to, share with our listeners tonight as far as how the, the U.S. economy might impact us, whether it's in jobs, or I mentioned investments earlier, but I mean, even our own jobs might be affected.
Well, one of the things I'd like to tell the students is that one of the best grassroots systems, we like to talk about grassroots development, private business is grassroots development. It's a person, an entrepreneur, deciding to start a business that hires employees, creates products, and really is the vitality of the economy. So we want to have an economy that is encouraging of people to take chances, to create new businesses, to bring people on. In the end, the best distributor of income in the economy is a job. So we need to create jobs. We need to create jobs, though, through private investment. Some countries, like I was reading the other day, that Switzerland is looking just to give handouts to people, $2,000 a month to every citizen,
wow.
and $500 to children for nothing. That might alleviate a lot of poverty and a lot of stress in people's lives, and some people might say that's very attractive. But on the other hand, there is a lot of personal fulfillment out of working, and creating an environment where people are creating useful services for each other, they're being of service to each other in a community. And so just being, taken care of by the government in that case is not the ideal. And I think we want to encourage an economy where people don't want to do that. They want to go out and find jobs. Mm-hmm. And there are jobs out there to be, you know, to be had. Mm-hmm. And so it's sometimes over-regulation or contradictory types of policies or, you know, tax policy is also a big issue. We have a lot of problem with repatriation of profits from abroad. We could do a lot better on bringing money back into the United States, for economic development and so mm-hmm. on. So there's a lot of domestic policies that would actually encourage this job creation and innovative, entrepreneur action.
Well, I think that our system, though, is fairly open for entrepreneurs who want to start their own business. I mean, a lot of times people will come to me and say, I'm thinking about starting my own business. Do I need to be a C corporation? Do I need to be an S corporation? And of course, I always say it depends. But sometimes I'll say, you know, the easiest way to get started, it's, you know, you're self-employed, you're a sole proprietor, Schedule C. You want to make sure, depending on what you're doing, that you have liability coverage and things like that. But it's fairly easy to really start a business.
Staying in business is tougher.
Staying in business is tougher, but you also have to do a little bit of homework and you know, a little bit of investment into, you know,
well,
whether
my dad, who's always been a self-employed businessman, you know, he says, when you're a self-employed businessman, you only have to work half a day, and it doesn't matter which 12 hours you pick. So it's a hard job to be a successful entrepreneur, but that's the kind of attitude we need to develop within the economy.
Yeah, it's true, because my parents were self-employed as well, and they worked 6 days a week. We never had vacation, never went anywhere, and that hard work ethic was instilled in us, but the six kids, none of us are self-employed because we saw what our parents went through.
Right.
They had a hardware store. Hardware stores.
I'm not an entrepreneur. I'm a professor. I get a regular paycheck and I have benefits and so on. So that's in some ways a much easier life than being an entrepreneur. So we mm-hmm. really have to look at the heroic qualities of these entrepreneurs, those people who are willing to take the chances to go out and say, I don't need a particular paycheck. I'm going to work for really hard, sometimes for next to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there will be that profit payoff at the end. But, they love what they're doing and they're doing their best.
And there are some rewards to them as well for, there's certain research credits, research and development credits, domestic production activity credits, certain tax credits that might help incent them. But I guess you also have to know that those are available to you, in addition. But yeah. All interesting.
That touches on your question about what we can do here. That sometimes getting assistance from the government is certainly legitimate, for many things. But there's also a tendency to what has been called crony capitalism, where businesses really are cozying too much up with politicians, and there's kind of a bad relationship developing where, that the government and business are kind of operating together. So I think that we have to be wary of that, and it gives a bad reputation to what free enterprise systems are about.
Mm-hmm.
Using the power of political operatives or politicians to kind of feather your profit and loss statements is not the way we should go.
Right, right. Going back to the four P's of economics and paying attention to that, and it's not the five P's with politics.
Politics. Oh, wait. Hey, I think I'll revise my lecture. Thank you very much.
No fifth P. That's a phantom P. P for phantom. So I had economics as part of my business major, and I had an economics professor who once said, people spend what they have. That's economics. And I have used that phrase often with clients because I don't want them to get used too much to, bonuses and pay raises, before they've taken the time to maybe save some of that money for themselves, for their future, for their retirement, for further investment, possibly in a business, or even to pay their taxes. That sometimes business people will think if they made $20,000, they get to spend $20,000. I say, there's some Social Security tax you have to pay there. There's some other things. So I was thinking if we kind of talk about a little bit about the basics with individuals when we talk about possibly opportunity cost and what do we have to kind of pay attention in our own personal economics. But, Jim, we have a caller on line two. We have Jeff.
Jeffrey, okay.
Can you hear us, Jeff?
Hello. My name is not Jeffrey. It's Kalen.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
That's okay. I had a question for Jim, who's a colleague of mine at Moravian College.
I was going to say, I recognize there's not that many Galens in the world around here.
Well, when I heard your voice on the air, Jim, I knew it was you instantly. So anyway, good to hear your good tones.
So, Galen, you're not a plant call tonight.
No, I'm not a plant call at all.
I guarantee you he's not.
Okay.
Not at all. And in point of fact, I'm playing off of our host's query to you, Jim, about things that may affect jobs and the job market in the years ahead. And I was wondering, Jim, if you would want to comment on the likely or at least possible impact of robotics and artificial intelligence in just literally turning the job market upside down. Martin Ford wrote a book, as you may recall, about a year ago, called Rise of the Robots, in which he quoted a team of researchers at Oxford University who looked at all of the job categories in the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics catalog of job categories and estimated that just about half of them could be replaced, half of those jobs could be done by robots or artificial intelligence or some combination of software and algorithms and automation.
Good question.
Would you care to talk a little bit about that? Because I think it would be something of great interest to the audience, or ought to be.
Galen, do you want to stay on the line while he talks about it?
Oh, sure. Okay.
Okay.
First of all, I want to say you can see why I have good, intelligent colleagues that keep me on my toes at work every day.
That's good.
If I say something, I say, wait a second, you can't say that. But I think, when we talked about the whack-a-mole game, where they have trade and immigration and investment, and you see those things are changing the marketplace, too, and they're taking jobs and moving things around, and people react against them. But the biggest one is technology. Technology is the biggest of the moles coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And technology, as you said, has changed our lives in so many ways already. I mean, college professors, we have to face the fact we're under threat. You can take these MOOC courses. You can have one intelligent economics professor, maybe two. They have two opinions there. And they can deliver economic courses to students all over the country or all over the world, for that matter. So we've seen this tremendous transition. So people have got to figure out ways to find new places, for new employment opportunities. A lot of the jobs that exist today didn't exist 20 years ago. The iPhone is a relatively new invention, 2007, 2008. But look at the tremendous impact it's had. But it also creates new opportunities and new jobs and creates new efficiencies. So where on the one hand we want to fear robotics, on the other hand we can look, this is a great opportunity for the world. So I think there's kind of a mixed blessing. A lot of people were concerned about bank tellers or toll booth collectors,
That's
losing
right.
their jobs. But most people right now are very happy with electronic banking. They're very happy with EasyPass. Mm-hmm. And the people who had those jobs had to face the harsh reality sometimes in personal lives that there's change is necessary. Continuous education, continuous flexibility is part of human life. It's nice to be comfortable. It's nice to be secure. But sometimes, as many people, and I'm sure in our audience know, things get shaken up at work. And you're really mm-hmm. forced to make some tough changes. But we can't stop change.
And Galen, we have creativity that we have to continue to infuse as well. And I'm not sure have they created a creative robot?
Oh, yes. yes. No, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm so behind.
In December of 2012, for example, the London Symphony Orchestra performed a work as part of its regular subscription series. It was entitled Transits. And it was reviewed in the Sunday Times and got a reasonably good review. And then the London Symphony Orchestra revealed that this piece of music was put together entirely by an algorithm with no human involvement.
Wow.
There are professors at Stanford who have algorithms that are currently turning out engineering plans, architectural plans. There's a professor who's developed an algorithm that does really pretty darn good sketches, and he's trying to get some of the artwork produced by these algorithms into art shows. I think the point, is that a lot of people think about robotics and they think about manufacturing robots, putting pieces into automobiles or things like that. The point is, machine learning is that machines are learning from other machines right now. And the pace at which the capacity of robots and artificial intelligence, the the pace at which they are able to do incredibly sophisticated work is just increasing so fast that I'm afraid that in particular, I'm afraid because our presidential candidates on literally on both sides of the aisle at this point, both Democratic and Republican, are still talking about, we got to bring back those jobs from overseas. Well, we may bring back, we are bringing back some manufacturing from overseas, but it's not bringing back any jobs in manufacturing, because, the stuff is all being done by robots. And so many other jobs will be done, through, software, which, one fellow out in Silicon Valley put it very well. Software is eating the world. And I'm not quite as sanguine as Jim is about, we'll create some new jobs will be created and so on. A few will, but I think we're looking at major, major dislocation over the next 10 to 20 years, in the job market, and a consequent need to really look at all aspects of government policy and educational policy and just about every aspect of society to get ready for it. But I've said enough, and I'll just sit back and let you respond, Jim.
Okay, thanks, Gail, and thanks
for
calling.
We're
going to have a quick break, and then when we come back, Jim is going to respond. Folks, phone number 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
I'll respond to Gail in a little bit.
Welcome back to the show. Do you have any comments from Galen's comments, and then we'll wrap up?
Well, Galen, my colleague over at Moravian College, makes a very good point that robotics and other technological changes are rapidly advancing, and we can really thank the free enterprise system for encouraging this change. So this, and in the end, this is going to be a good thing. It's hard to picture it when, when your job is being threatened or something like that, but if you look at the opportunities that exist for humanity to spread the goods and services and the lifestyle changes that have so many countries in the world are desirous of. If robotics can be part of that solution, I think let's go for it.
Mm-hmm.
I recognize it's going to make change. It's going to make changes for me as a professor, and it's going to make changes for bank tellers and toll collectors and thousands of other people on the line in manufacturing facilities. But I don't think we want to turn back technology. There was a old time where in England, where they had what were called the Luddites, who wanted to actually break machinery to stop the Industrial Revolution, and because they saw machinery as taking their jobs. And clearly, I think robotics will take jobs, but it will also create a whole new spectrum of goods and services that can be globally brought to human beings all over the world, and at the same time, will create a lot of innovation and a lot of drive, and a lot of the creativity will
Right, we'll be forced to be more creative as this occurs. So let's bring down, we have about 7 minutes left. Let's talk about maybe bringing the economics down to us as individuals. So we've talked about the production, prices, property, and profits, and how that impacts the economy. How can we apply some of that to us as individuals? What would the takeaway be for us in our own lives as to...
Well, I think from the investment perspective that you talked about later, and I quoted my dad's great wisdom once earlier, the 12 hours a day thing, but one thing he always used to tell me too, well, the three rules of finance you never forget is more is better than less, now is better than later, for sure is better than maybe. So the ideas of risk and return and the time value of money are things people should take into consideration. Put aside some savings, let it grow for the future. And, someday you'll be very glad that you did that. So make good financial plans. Don't take more risk than you're comfortable with. Don't put yourself into a situation like where you lose a lot of money. Somebody gives you the sure thing, and then the sure thing blows up on you and you lose money because you might not have the risk threshold for that, or maybe your spouse or children don't have the risk threshold for it. So you should really evaluate your family's risk threshold when you get into any kind of investment. Same thing too, you look for better returns. You look for, you know, a good return on your investments. You worked hard for your money. If you can find a good investment that meets your risk criteria, you should spend a little time and do a little homework to find out where that money should go.
You know, I have talked on past shows about doing a financial inventory, and people need to understand what their assets are, where they are, but what they are and what kind of returns they're getting on them, and from an after-tax standpoint as well, because not all investments are created equally. When we look at the returns, we could get a 4% return on two different types of investment vehicles, but the taxes on them may be different. So we want to look at the after tax cost of the returns that we have, and also the cost of borrowing. So do this inventory to kind of understand what returns you're getting even after borrowing and tax deductions and things like that.
It's a complex field, you know, so you're definitely a complex environment. So I think people need to spend a little bit of time thinking about personal finance and not just, you know, spend their money, as you said earlier on, you just spend what you have, you know.
Right.
You don't want to do that because there is a future and you want to be in a better position for the future.
Right. And make sure that we even apply the principles of economics that you talked about when we even look at production. What are we producing? How hard are we working? Are we working to the best of our ability or picking the right career choices, making the right career choices? Even I tell folks you could go look for a job that might be the exact same pay scale, but the benefits may be different. So you need to look under the hood for that. So that's your own kind of personal production, pricing, maybe how much you're getting paid or providing to the business to make sure you're getting the value that you deserve, property owning, and profits you're saving. So kind of take these elements and apply it. So my last kind of question, you've traveled and done extensive research. What do you find intriguing in what you do?
Well, as I said at the opening of the interview, that really I see myself as an economics professor, but just a professor. And economics is a long line branch from philosophy, so it's kind of the philosophy of economics. I think we have the great fortune to live in a country where we've adopted a pretty powerfully motivating economic system and political system. But there are some guidelines. There are some things we have to do to preserve this. And first and foremost, I think education is one of the things. People have to understand what makes this democracy work, what makes this, what makes this economic system work, and that those freedoms and those rights and those protections that are there, they be equally available. That the equalities we want to see is we want to see equality of freedom for all people, and we want to see equality of rights. Economists are not big arguers for the equality of outcomes. People do have to have variable incomes. People who work harder, take bigger chances, or get more education are going to get paid more. We don't want to see extremes of poverty and wealth, but we do want to see, a kind of outcomes will vary. I sometimes say to my students, just make my life a lot easier. No grading. Everybody gets a B-. And, of course, that will kill incentives on both sides.
Right.
So kind of aiming for kind of a perfect equality is not what you want to do because it discourages the people who want to work hard if points are taken away. And it also just, kind of is a free lunch to the people who don't want to work hard. So you end up with very little incentives in the economy. So the idea that there are incentives, there are rewards, that's a positive thing, and we want to maintain that. That's not to say we shouldn't have some kind of redistribution system. We can't have extremes of wealth and poverty. But to the extent that this can be done through voluntary, the United States, one of the other great strengths is not only our private sector, which is an engine of growth, pumping out $18 trillion worth of stuff, a good balanced democratic public sector, but we also have a nonprofit sector as well. Americans and people around the world in general are givers. They want to give. They want to help people. But when they do it voluntarily, they're happy to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If they feel like they're being clubbed over their head and the money's being taken out of their pocket through taxes, there's resistance, there's resentment. So we to encourage this feeling of we're part of the community. We want to share our resources. We've been blessed to be born in a wonderful country. We've been blessed to have the opportunity to get an education, to get a good job, and now I want to be of service not only through my work but through my philanthropic activities as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think Americans are generous, and that's we're at a college, and all the colleges in this area, all the hospitals in this area, so many people are the beneficiaries of the generosity that is voluntarily given by citizens of the locality.
Jim, it's been absolutely wonderful having you. I hope that we can make this a recurring event.
Okay.
If we can tie you into it. You're just did a great job.
Okay.
So we've had Professor James West from Moravian College. Thank you so much for coming here. I really appreciate it. Folks, if you want to listen to any of our old shows or this show later at a future date, you can go on wdiy.org and look for the podcast for any of the shows that we do here. So that might be available. I think this might be one worth listening to again, and I really appreciate you being here.
What are the four P's? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Production, pricing, property, profits, and Adam Smith. We got it. Next week, I'm going to have Loretta Tubiello-Har on the show to talk about student loan consolidations and some college issues. We'll do that next week. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. I want to thank Jeff for being here, Lori for being here, and of course, again, Professor James West, who will start his law career soon. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.